Okay. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Come on in. So I'll go ahead and get started. For those of you that I haven't met yet, I'm Elena Ross, and I'm here in the village for about a week and a half. And normally I'm at home working full-time. I teach nutrition, health, and fitness classes full-time at Lower Columbia College, which is in Longview, Washington. And I'm taking care of my four children, which I got to take a little break from this weekend. But they are actually all coming up to the village tomorrow, and we're going to stay together, so it'll be a lot of fun, and my husband as well. So anyways, today we're going to be talking about reforming our eating habits. How can we nourish our bodies and our planet in today's food culture, which is a challenge. Looking at the types of foods we have nowadays and just the things that have happened in the last 100 to 200 years with our food has changed a lot. The first thing I wanted to mention is that God planned for us to have really good food, right? When he made the Garden of Eden, he actually told Adam and Eve what to eat, that he's giving us the seed-bearing plants and every tree that has fruit, and they will be yours for food. And so he's given us this beautiful earth, and he's given us this food for us to eat. There's also many instances in the Bible where you'll find that he has provided food for his people. Manna in the desert for the Israelites when they had no food to eat. The promised land, which was promised to be flowing with milk and honey, which is interesting that now that area is what is now the Mediterranean area, which has one of the richest and healthiest diets in the whole world, which we'll talk about a little bit later. He had sent Joseph to save not only his family, but most of Egypt when there was that big famine, and they stored up the grain for many, many years so that they would have food during the many years of famine that came later. The story of Jesus feeding the 5,000. The people had no food, and the loaves and fishes came out of nowhere, and it was an amazing miracle. So God has always provided good, healthy food from the earth for us to take care of us and nourish us, and he made our bodies so that we need food to sustain us and to stay alive, and he provided us with an earth that provides all of our needs for us. When I found this verse, I actually did not know that we were going to be talking about renewing our youth like the eagles, and I know that verse is from Isaiah, but this one is from Psalms, which also talks about being renewed like an eagle. Bless the Lord, O my soul, and forget not all his benefits, who satisfies your mouth with good things so that your youth is renewed like the eagles. So early humans have always been omnivores, so eating meat and plants. We were hunters and gatherers. So, and if you were at my talk yesterday, we talked a lot about how hunters and gatherers spent many hours a day being active and going out finding their food. So we ate things from the earth as well as finding meat. So there was always berries and seeds and nuts and tubers, which are the, you know, potatoes under the ground, things like that. When people started using fire to eat is when they started actually cooking and baking their food. And this was actually a really unique time for humans because there was a shift in how people ate. Because instead of just foraging, eating as you go, something is actually being cooked around a fire, so it's ready at one time, so we're all going to eat together, and it becomes a community thing that we do. And that makes us as humans unique when we're comparing to animals and things like that. So it's pretty amazing that we can live on so many different continents with so many different types of diets out there and still survive and be healthy. So humans can eat so many different types of foods, and all of these diets from around the world can be very, very healthy. It's really been only in the last 100, 150 years that the diet has taken this major downturn, and we've seen the negative health effects from that change. So before the obesity epidemic, people were living in communities and towns. A lot of people had their own farms or gardens, grow their own vegetables. Starting in the 1800s is when people started canning their own vegetables as well. And they'd use their own animals for meat, milk, butter, and cheese. So just in 1900, 30% of families lived on their own farms. But today, it's much lower than that. A big shift started in the early 1900s when we began to refine our grains and our sugars. So if you look at the grain there, on the outside is the bran, which is the fibrous part of the grain. And there's a little, the germ in there is kind of the nutrient-rich area, which has lots of vitamins and phytochemicals in it, which was the nourishment for the seed. And then the endosperm is the starchy middle. So when we started refining our grains, we basically cut out the bran completely, took off the germ completely, which has the fiber and the antioxidants and the phytochemicals, and we just are getting that endosperm, which is the starchy part with the calories in the middle. So it's the same calories, but we're losing those nutrients and we're losing that fiber. And in the early 1900s, this was something for rich people. They want the white flour was this beautiful white color. It lasted longer because it didn't have these phytochemicals and things in it. And so people wanted the white flour. And now today, that's become the staple flour is white flour. And we've gotten really far away from the whole grains, but they are definitely starting to come back as we're realizing that we've lost so many nutrients from going to the white flour. We also started to see a decrease in dental health in the early 1900s, and they believe it's because of the refining of the grains, and also this is when sugar became cheaper, and people would start purchasing sugar and adding sugar to recipes as well. And if you guys have any questions or comments as I'm going, just please feel free to raise your hand and let me know. So we have the beginning of processed foods was in the early 1900s. If you look at this slide, I know it's hard to see the colors. This is looking at obesity starting in 1985. And you can see most of the states are white, so we don't have data on them. But the ones that are reporting are between 10 and 14% obesity. 1990, you see more states are reporting, but again, about half the country's in that 10 to 14% obesity. 1995, now we have a new category, 15 to 19%, almost the whole east side. 2000, another new category, that 20 to 24% obesity. Colorado's holding out there in the 10 to 14%. And 2005, two more new categories. Kind of starting in the deep south is where most of the obesity is. 2010, and you can just see over the years, the last 35 years or so, it's just been spreading and spreading and growing. So we have been getting larger as a country. So what is going on? So these are the trends just to look at between 1990 and 2010. Any thoughts or comments? Yeah.
Yeah, I think as people all get heavier, it becomes the norm.
Yes.
So then
yes.
When you see people who have healthy weight, you think, oh, they're too skinny.
Yes.
And our vision and thoughts.
Yeah, there's studies on that. People who live with, people who are overweight or obese are more likely to be overweight or obese, and if their friends are, and they think it's a social mm-hmm. acceptance.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So they changed how they reported. So this one is a little bit different, but this is the latest one that's come out in 2016. So you can kind of get a picture of that. Colorado just happens to always be the healthiest state there. So, and actually, I think Hawaii's in the same category. But still, we have over 35% obesity in the South there, and 30 to 35% is most of the Midwest. So, okay. So currently, and I started teaching this information, you know, 10, 15 years ago. And this, when I first started teaching it, my slide said like 60%. And over the years, I've had to keep changing things because things have been changing. But currently, 68% of our population is overweight and obese. Of the 68%, 36% are obese and 32% are overweight. And that's the first time we actually had a shift where we have more obese people than overweight people.
How do you measure that? How do you find the
difference? It's a BMI scale. BMI is what they're using. Body mass index, which is a height and weight.
Yeah. What is your caption? Oh, I just should have said.
Oh, okay, just a second. Cartoon. Can Johnny come out to eat instead of can Johnny come out to play, right? what strikes me about this information is that being at a normal weight is now a minority, kind of what you were saying. So less than a third of our population is considered normal or underweight. So the majority of our population is considered overweight or obese. So what are some issues with being obese? Well, it's linked to certain specific cancers that are listed on there. It's linked to dementia, type 2 diabetes, metabolic syndrome, heart disease, depression. I didn't even list everything. This is just really the tip of the iceberg. So many things are associated with obesity. So why is our country so obese? Well, we talked about how people were hunters and gatherers, and yesterday I talked about how they used to walk 12 to 18 miles a day. So our activity levels have definitely changed. And just because we're humans, we crave three things, okay? We crave fat, sugar, and salt, and that's very natural for us to crave them. Because fat is stored energy, sugar is a quick energy, and salt helps to maintain our water balance. The tricky thing with these three things now is we have them in abundance in our food supply, and they're easy and they're cheap. And so food companies know that we want these things as people, and they put them into our food at certain levels, and they actually measure the levels of sugar to get what they actually call the bliss point, which is where we really enjoy the sugar, and if they put more than that, it's too much. And it gives us that sense of almost addiction coming back to those foods again and again. So these companies are very smart. They've done studies on this type of thing, and they know that we as humans crave those three things. So the problem is we have an abundance of calories, and it's cheap, and it's easy for us to get. And we as humans crave these things. Our country actually produces 3,900 calories per day per person, and that includes children, babies, everybody. And what most of us probably need is around 2,000 or less. So we're making more food than we need, which causes a lot of competition between the food companies and overeating in the long run. Yes. Yes.
Also, you might talk about this later, but you know, working with Head Start and early Head Start for many years, it's really expensive to eat healthy for families. And so a lot of our effort was trying to teach them how to use limited resources to eat healthy, because things like fresh food and fresh vegetables are very expensive, and junk food is actually quite cheap.
Yeah, it is. Soda pop is really cheap, chips, processed foods. We do things in my classes back home where the students actually have to go out and compare and do a cost comparison. Yeah. But when they come back, they realize you can create a healthy meal for cheaper than an unhealthy meal. But it takes the education, the time, and the planning, and a lot of us don't have those three things.
Yeah.
So we're so busy, and to know exactly what fruits can I buy that are in season that would be cheaper, and to go that route, but we can do it. So I do want you to take just maybe 2 to 3 minutes in small groups and talk about this question here. Why is our country so obese, and what has changed since around 1980? Because that's really when we see that big shift in obesity. And I love that most of us were alive in the 80s. Because my students today So go ahead. So I'd love to hear some of the things that came up, and then we'll see if I ended up with the same things on my slide here. So what are some things you guys think have changed since the 80s as far as food and culture?
A lot more fast food restaurants.
A lot more fast food, yes. Definitely. Yeah.
More sedentary entertainment.
Yes. That's a good way to put it.
The prevalence of the home computer.
The home computer came in, yeah, around that time, right? Yes.
Well, our economy changed, so it was very difficult to support a household on one paycheck.
Yes.
Because you both have to work, which means no person can be full-time trying to care for the needs of just the family.
Exactly.
And the house.
Yep, absolutely.
I have a friend who is a facts teacher, family consumer science.
Yes.
Home ec to those of us who didn't have consumer science. But she talks about portion distortion.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Sure.
We're going to get to that today, too. Yeah. Yes.
Marketing.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Food marketing.
About TV ads.
Yeah.
And that sort. And we also, it seemed like our lifestyles became social events started to revolve more around food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Anytime we get together, there's food, yeah.
And maybe there was also a little bit of a grace period, like a lot of the things that were named and that we talked about mm-hmm. really were already evident in the 60s
sure.
and the 70s, mm-hmm. but it mm-hmm. took a while before the statistical big picture
yep.
came to our attention.
Yes, good point.
Shuttling kids everywhere instead of just letting them walk.
So we're driving our kids everywhere, yeah. not letting them walk places. Okay, up here.
Well, there's a lot of things related with childhood obesity, but some
yes.
of it is if a very young child becomes obese, it's very difficult, almost impossible to get them down to a healthy
right.
weight because
right.
their fat cells are set that way.
Right. Once obese as a child,
it's really challenging.
Yeah. Studies show that's most likely what will continue. Yeah.
This may not be scientific, but pantyhose became cheaper. So people didn't have to wear girdles to wear their nylons.
I'll tell you, that one's not up here.
Well, there's a shift from centralized stores out in the city to malls and
yeah.
shopping centers.
Mm-hmm.
So now there are food deserts where
yes.
people cannot get fresh
right.
produce, so they have all these starchy things
mm-hmm.
that's available, and they can't afford to go
to drive
to
yes.
drive to get those things.
Yes, that's a big concern because they go to mini marts and not healthy food. So.
I don't know what specifically would have been the impetus for it, but my impression is that the ability to like. Eat food anywhere and transport food anywhere was it? I mean, just like think about the 1980s,
sure.
you wouldn't
yeah.
go get Starbucks. You wouldn't get coffee that you then take with you
yeah.
somewhere.
Right.
Like coffee. You wouldn't like Go-Gurt wasn't a thing.
Yeah.
Like that's. And I don't
yeah.
know if there was a specific thing that caused that, or was just like a shift in the culture realizing like, oh, we could do this so that you can eat anywhere and
yeah.
get food anywhere.
Well, some of that
food
goes back to the double income. I know, like with my son's family. All four are in the car at 8 o'clock in the morning, and the kids are eating
mm-hmm.
breakfast
in
the back
car.
Seat.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
you don't eat breakfast and then leave. You
yeah.
can ride
yes.
it as you go.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That piggybacking on that is about eating slowly,
mm-hmm.
and if you eat slowly, you're more aware of what you eat.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But I was also thinking, my parents were born in the teens, so they
okay.
were really old. But I learned a lot of things about eating from older people in my life
mm-hmm.
and how to do things, you know, during they learned to scrimp during the Depression,
yes.
they cook from
yeah.
scratch. And
yep.
there are lots of things that I know how to do that a lot of younger women
they don't
haven't
know.
Had the opportunity,
yeah.
but some
mm-hmm.
of it has to do with work, some of it has to, you know.
Right. Lifestyles have changed, and now we're getting
right.
to the point where generations don't know how to cook anymore. And I know, like, my grandmother's gardened. My parents did not. I had no idea how to garden. I've tried to start one, and it's been okay, but it would have been better probably if that would have been passed down.
Yeah.
So.
Kind of piggybacking on that is people don't can fresh foods as much as
yeah.
they used to. For good reason.
What do you mean?
Kidding.
I think it's hard.
Yeah,
it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
It takes time.
Yeah.
Yeah,
right.
It takes time.
But just the growing it yourself and cutting out the whole middleman with the, I mean, the idea of that is great, so, yeah.
But I was just going to say that also in the 50s and so on and forward, the suburban
urbanization
began. Mm-hmm. And there were canned foods and there were convenience foods. And,
yes.
You know, so even my mother didn't cook the way her mother cooked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been changing the last 150 years, big changes.
Like
so sedentary lifestyle is one. So you guys mentioned that technology has been huge. I mean, even just what's happened since the 80s until now has been an absolutely huge changes. You guys mentioned fast food. I don't think we mentioned this one. Maybe you talked about it, though, but jobs are less active than they used to be. Most of us have desk jobs. We did mention both mom and dad working. Now you don't have, you know, mom home all day to prepare and cook a homemade meal, so we get more of the processed foods. I mentioned earlier how we have an abundant food supply. Our portion sizes are larger, and I'll show you a picture of that in a little bit, but they have grown quite a bit. Also, we're so busy, just time to make and prepare our meals, less time to be active. The cost of foods, and then the low-fat myth was really big in the 80s and 90s, right? Because
yeah.
That's when it came out that, oh, butter is really high in saturated fat. We need to do something about that. And so they basically added hydrogen to healthy fats, healthy oily fats, and created this margarine and told everyone, this is so much better for you because it's not saturated fat. But they didn't tell us till 30 years later that what they had created was trans fat, which I think most of us know is even worse than saturated fat in the first place. And fat in our diet is a really good thing. Our brains are mostly made out of fat. We need fat for a lot of different reasons. It's just eating the right kinds of fats. So when we all went to that low-fat diet and they took fats out of all of our foods and it was cookies, no-fat cookies for sale, everything was no-fat, low-fat, that's really when we started to become more obese. What did they put in the foods instead of fat?
Sugar.
Yes, and the studies are now showing it's actually sugar that has made us obese, not the fat. And so this increase, huge increases in sugar that we've added to the foods has actually been worse for us. Yeah?
I was just going to say there was also that big thing about cholesterol and fat.
Mm-hmm.
And now, at least my doctor says that it's more white. Unrefined grains that create cholesterol, that fat is not...
I know. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
How we always think of, eat a low cholesterol, low fat diet to protect your arteries.
Yeah.
But your body makes triglycerides from the sugar, and that goes into our arteries and clogs our arteries. So, yeah. It was a huge myth that went on for a long time.
That many of us listened to.
We all did, right? I mean, I remember that, definitely.
Well, and if it's low fat, you can eat more.
Yeah, that's true.
Right, and so you would eat more of it. And it wasn't filling. Fat is one of the most filling things you can eat, fat and protein. So if you don't include that in a meal, you're not going to feel satisfied, and so you eat more. Yeah. Okay, so obesogenic society basically means a society that supports obesity. We allow ourselves to be obese because we have all these things around us that we can be obese. So our busy schedules, in our country, we spend an average of 7 to 9% of our income on our food, which is the lowest of every single country out there. So we, even though we complain about food prices, we actually are spending less than the other countries.
I'm just curious, do you know how much we spend on housing compared to...
Percentage?
Okay.
That's a good question.
Because as much as portion control, I think our housing has gone crazy.
Different
subject.
And I don't know.
You have to work more to pay for the bigger houses.
Well, be somewhere between 35% and 50% for our income on housing. If you're going for a loan, they don't want you going above 35%.
Right. But I wonder
but a lot of people are paying 50%.
Yeah. Well, we want, a lot of things. We want better, bigger, faster. We want fancy phones. We want fancy cars. And so we don't want to spend a lot on food, right? Because we want all these other things. Other countries, the poor countries, are spending up to 50% of their income on their food. And that's normal in their country. But here, we just aren't used to spending that much. Even in the European countries, they're spending around 15% of their income on food, and they buy better foods than what we tend to purchase in our country.
How do they waste less?
Yes.
Is it because a lot of our grain and that kind of thing, there's a farm supplement that farmers make more money in?
Oh, the commodity crops?
Yeah,
rather than... So like our corn is actually cheaper. Corn, soy, cotton, I'm trying to think of what all the commodity crops are. But those are really cheap for farmers to grow, which is why we've made like everything out of corn. That's why we feed our cows corn now instead of grass, and why our big sugar product is high fructose corn syrup, because it's really cheap for farmers to grow those products, even though they might not be the healthiest for us. So that's part of it, definitely. Also, processed food and fast food is acceptable. If you think back, you know, 30 years, smoking was more acceptable, but it's not as acceptable as it used to be. But going to fast food, or, you know, going out with your friends and grabbing a burger or whatever it might be, is completely acceptable thing to do. So just something to think about. Yeah. What about our kids? Are we overdoing the snacks and treats? So anytime there's a kid's party, there's a lot of sweets and sugars there, right? And the marketing for foods is mostly geared towards children. So children's cartoons, 90% of the commercials are for foods, and they're geared towards the kids. And they tend to be the sweet cereals and just basically the processed, sugary type things. And then what do kids do? They come to mom and dad, hey, can we go out to eat here, or can we get this sugar cereal? And mom and dad would want to please their kids, and so they purchase that. So the companies know what they're doing with the marketing. All right, this is my 7-year-old. And he, you know, my kids play sports, and he plays soccer. And so my husband was coaching this season. This was last year. And he, you know, most of the time we do game snacks. After the game, one family prepares a snack for the team. And he said, you know, just bring a little juice box and a granola bar. And we did it the first week to show an example of a healthy snack. So snacks evolved. Okay, I don't know what parents are trying to do. But this was a typical snack that my son ended up with. A fruit by the foot, cheddar goldfish, granola bar, Tootsie Roll Pop, and a Powerade for a 6-year-old. Okay. It's like Gatorade, which is, you know, meant for as a sports drink because it has electrolytes, but it's so high in sugar and it's got food dyes and all that. So the total was 520 calories worth of a snack for a 6-year-old with 52 grams of sugar.
How much sugar?
And this was an average snack. I didn't pick, you know, this one's worse than all the others, but this was a typical.
What would be a healthy intake of sugar for a 6-year-old?
You're one step ahead of that. Oh. Okay, so a 6-year-old soccer game, they play 3-on-3. It's 2 16-minute halves, and since there's 6 kids on the team, they each play half of that, right? Mm-hmm. So he's playing 16 minutes of soccer for his game, and an average 6-year-old would burn 30 to 50 calories. And they're giving him...
That's all?
Yeah, I know. They're little. But the snack was 520. So it's not like he's replacing calories. He's getting more by playing the sport. And you were asked about sugar. Recommendation for sugar for a 6-year-old is 12 grams a day. And that just the snack was 52. And think of the whole scope of the whole day, you know, he'd have more sugar in his diet. So to me, this has been, as a parent, a difficult...
But those parents didn't know.
Well,
what'd you say?
Like I said, my husband was coaching the team, and we tried to set an example the first game, and he said healthy snacks, like I'll usually put like a little orange or something, you know, fruit in there, but this is what other teams do, and they do this on other teams, and this is just the social norm, is really to do this big snack pack.
More is better, and get out snack the other parents.
Exactly. Exactly. So we're feeding our kids just a lot of junk and a lot of calories. So are we getting sick from this diet?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I know when I was a kid, diabetes was really rare. And now it's just, it's all over the place. Mm-hmm. But also the incidence of heart disease, cancers. And, you know, the questions are we able to do the things we want to do if we're carrying extra weight or if we don't feel good because we're eating so many grams of sugar that the body just doesn't know how to process? Can we play with our kids? Can we keep up on a hike? Can we do, you know, the things that God might have planned for us? And are we able to live to our fullest potential on this type of a diet? So I see a lot of people that can't walk up the stairs where I work, and they will come to my office and want to talk about, I got to make a change because I can't do the things that I want to do with my life. I can't keep up with my kids when they're running around the yard. And there's some really amazing stories about people changing things around. But God wants us to be the light of the world and shine before others. And I think this isn't just our spiritual sense, but our whole body and what we do. Because that's who we are, and God has given us our bodies as well, and he's the one that's providing the food for us. This is a quote from one of the books I was looking at. Your failure to eat right can affect your health. The devil would love to take advantage of your poor choices to place sickness and disease on you and your family. The other thing we've lost with our eating habits is the sense of community. Like I mentioned earlier, when people started using fire and cooking together is when they came together and they ate at the same time because food was ready at the same time, and they enjoyed that sense of community through, you know, thousands of years. The fire is warm, food is ready at a specific time, and it's a sense of community. But with today's food culture, like this group was mentioning, it's eat on the go. Okay, you can, you know, everything has a lid, everything has a to-go box, and you can eat it in the car. You can eat it anywhere you're at work. And we don't need to cook anymore, right, because we can do a drive-through, or we can put something in the microwave, and it's prepared for one person. So I don't need to sit down and cook a whole meal for my family if I can just, you know, eat my own meal by myself. And it's unfortunate to see a lot of my friends, families, you know, the moms are just, I'm too busy, so my kids get their own dinner. You know, this on their own time when they get home from their sports, and they don't eat together, they don't cook a meal together, because they don't need to in our society. We can just throw food together. And so eating has now become individualized. It's no longer this sense of community in a lot of families, not everybody, but in a lot of families. Okay, let's talk about the actual hunger hormones. So, we all know what it feels like to be hungry, right? But satiety is that sense where we've had enough food and we feel good. And there's some proteins in there. So, ghrelin is a hormone secreted by the stomach that says you're hungry, okay? And you've all been there and felt that. Leptin is basically the opposite. It's the hormone, it's actually secreted by your fat cells. Fat cells tell your brain we are full, and we do not need to eat any more food. So you've all been there too, right?
Last night.
Oh. We should talk about the portion sizes. So we have these hormones in our body that are regulating this process, which is a good thing, because when you get full, you want your body needs to say stop, and it's time to stop eating our food. The problem is, have we forgotten how to listen to those signals? God gave us these hormones, right, to give us the signals. When I'm hungry, I know it's time to eat. When I am satisfied, I know it's time to stop. So does anyone eat for culture? I know I get students come from, like, Italian or Greek or Mexican backgrounds, and it's just you go to grandma's house, and there's food, and it's a cultural thing, and you have to eat it. Anybody? Yeah, so there's culture. Portion sizes. Can you guys see this one with the fast food there? So in the 1950s, back when fast food started, your drink was 7 ounces. Do you know how big that is now? I mean,
hamburgers were
3.9 ounces and fries were 2.4. And look over to the other side. You can get sodas, 42 ounces, compared to 7.
How much sugar is in 42 ounces?
Above 50, probably 70 or plus grams. And the burgers and fries are bigger too, but just even drinks, coffee drinks, nowadays like a 12 ounce is considered small, and most people get the, you know, the grande or the venti size, which is over 1,000 calories in it. So we just kind of, we want a treat, so we get bigger and bigger. And I brought my son to Starbucks just for a small kid's hot chocolate, and they're like, oh, let's give him a bigger one, he needs a bigger size. I'm like, no, 8 ounces is good, it's okay. So portion sizes, and we go to a restaurant, portion sizes are huge. Look at these plates. In the 1960s, the average dinner plate was 8.5 inches, and today the average dinner plate is 12 inches. Yes, and they've done studies on this as well, and we like to have a full plate. So even if we have a bigger plate but the same portion size that you put on a smaller plate, we would still fill it. I mean, that's what the studies show. So if we have smaller plates, that can help to decrease portion sizes, because it's a visual thing when we're eating.
And if you do eat at delis, like at Whole Foods, you learn very quickly that the smallest plate is the best one to take, because it's the only way to stay within budget.
Okay. Good call. Upbringing. Who was raised with clean your plate, eat everything on your plate? I was raised that way. Okay. And so we get this little voice in our head when we're eating, right, that says you need to finish everything that's on your plate. Even if your body is saying we're full.
Yeah.
I heard that one too when I was a kid. Even if your body is saying stop eating, we stop listening to our body, and we're listening to this voice in our head from when we were kids saying, you know, finish everything on your plate. So that's a big one for people. Who's influenced by their friends or family? They want to go out to eat fast food or something, and you want to join them. Advertising. I know some people are more susceptible to this than others. They'll drive past a restaurant and just feel like they need to stop, or they'll see a commercial and feel like they have to have that burger. Anybody like that in here?
I've seen commercials for fast food that say it's 11:30 at night and you are having a hunger attack. You need to go out and get it.
Yeah, they're really trying to get in your head. anyone eat while they watch TV?
No.
Okay. So what tends to, I know if you live here at Holden, it's a little different, but people who tend to eat while watching TV tend to eat more because they're not paying attention to portion sizes. Yep. So it's kind of mindless eating. Anyone eat when they're bored?
No.
It's just something to do. Go grab something to eat. And then we have emotional eating. So if we look at this list, we've kind of forgotten how to listen to our body signals, and we're listening to other things instead. So I'm going to go through some different styles of eating and see if you guys can relate to some of these. So we have the misguided eater. So this person doesn't diet often, but when they do, they want to drop a few pounds. They sometimes eat emotionally. They're concerned about nutrition. They ignore their signals of hunger and satiety. So if food is there, they'll eat it instead of listening to their body. They often overeat, and they'll say, I was told to clean my plate. They're subject to those packaged, portioned meals. They feel guilty if they feel hungry, which is not how we should feel.
Guilty?
Guilty? Why would that be really?
Because they've had this sense of depriving themselves, and they don't want to eat when they should, and it's kind of a mix up psychologically. Yeah. So hopefully this isn't anybody, but this person needs to stop and start listening to their body. Deprivation driven eater. This person has been on weight loss diets before, and so they've felt deprived, and then they tend to feel out of control around food because they've deprived themselves. They label foods as good or bad. Again, don't listen to the body signals. Don't feel relaxed around food. Are afraid that it will be hard for them to stop eating. So this person needs to stop dieting, stop counting calories, and start allowing foods back into the diet. Then we have emotional eating. This is more common. This person separates food from hunger to satisfy an emotional need. So they're not physically hungry, but they have an emotional neglect. So maybe they're sad or lonely or something else is going on. And so they turn to food for comfort instead of actually solving whatever the emotional distress might be. So again, they're ignoring the body signals and listening to the emotional signals instead. And they're using that food as a coping mechanism. So advice for them is actually to keep track of how they're feeling when they start eating. Because if you realize, oh, I'm actually eating because I'm sad, not because I'm hungry. Sometimes we get the signals mixed up if we start doing this type of a thing. And to actually track the emotions linked with eating and then find a healthy way to deal with the emotions instead of eating, which would be talking to others, exercise, counseling, things like that. Volume eater just likes to eat a lot of food. So some advice for this person is eat a lot of fruits and vegetables. Eat a lot of things that are low calorie, like watermelon, things like that. But incorporate grains because they'll make you feel full. Special occasion victim. This person, when they go to parties, that's their time to eat a lot of extra food. High calorie, high processed food. I have a friend who grew up when they when they would go on a road trip, they could eat whatever they want. And so that became, you know, a psychological thing for her. Oh, I'm on a road trip, so now I'm going to get a bunch of junk food. So that would be like the special occasion victim. So you've got to get out of some of these bad habits. But, you know, packing healthy snacks or doing other things can help. Then we have the must-have, see it and eat it. So if someone else has a snack or, you know, I know at our work there will be, like, treats in the faculty room, and you walk in there, oh, there's a treat, so I'm going to grab it. But
and
not
call it a treat, right? It's not just food, it's a treat.
Right, a treat, yeah, which could be not food as well, right? Mm-hmm. Good point.
An apple or an orange? Or
yeah. Okay, this is where we want to be. An attuned eater is someone who listens to their bodies. So they eat when they're hungry. They stop when they're full. They seldom eat when they're not hungry. This person typically maintains a natural weight. They don't worry about weight loss. They're not concerned with dieting. They don't neglect pleasurable foods. So they don't say, oh, I can't eat that. That's not good for me or not healthy for me. But they do consider nutrition when choosing foods. So this is where, you know, we want to get to that place where we're mindful eaters, where we stop before we eat and think, okay, listen to our body. Am I actually hungry for this food? And if yes, then it's time to eat. And if you realize, I mean, there have been times someone has offered me something and it looks good, but I stop and think, you know, I'm not actually hungry for it, so I'm not going to have it. And I feel bad saying no because it's, you know, more culturally acceptable to say yes, but mm-hmm. to say no thank you is okay. So let's just take maybe 1 minute. If anyone wants to share an eating style that they relate to, or you have a friend that you could relate to maybe has an issue, or maybe what could you do to make yourself a more attuned eater? So go ahead and do that with someone next to you. Okay, go ahead and finish up. Any thoughts anyone wants to share with the whole group on that one? Anything you want to share with the whole group from your discussions? Okay.
Can I be two or more? Can I identify as two or more?
Yes, you can.
Okay.
Yes. Is that your question? Yeah.
I identify as two or more.
Yeah, and some people definitely maybe even identify with three of them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay, so what about sleep? Does that influence your weight?
Yeah.
Okay. So if you sleep less than 6 hours a night, Your ghrelin, which remember, that makes you feel hungry, goes up. And your leptin, which makes you feel full, goes down. So how do you feel?
Yeah.
Hungry. And even if you didn't burn calories from being awake, you're going to be more hungry and most likely you will eat more. Mm-hmm. So there you go. Get more than 6 hours of sleep a night. What about stress? Yes. So if you were here yesterday, I talked about cortisol, which is the stress hormone, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So when we're stressed, cortisol goes up. It's a good hormone to help us handle stress. But if you were actually in fight or flight, which we talked about yesterday, you would be burning a lot of calories, right? You were running from something or you were fighting somebody. You were in a dire situation. You would be burning a ton of calories. In today's day and age, when we go into fight or flight, we're not burning those calories. It's more like work stress or relationship stress, and we keep it inside. But your body still thinks that because you were stressed, you burned a lot of calories. And then cortisol actually tells your body to eat more to replace those calories that it thinks you burned, even though you did not burn them. So, therefore, you're more likely to be hungry with stress and to eat more. Now, there is a reverse side to this. There are some people with stress who tend to eat less and lose weight. So, but most people tend to fall under this category.
I used to think only skinny people didn't eat for stress.
Okay.
Or healthy weight people, because they are,
Because you were like, how else does it work?
Yeah, like pretty much. Stressed, the first thing you did was open the fridge.
Some people lose their appetite when they're stressed, and they tend to not eat as much. Yeah, and some people, the cortisol actually does. They do, their metabolism speeds up with stress, and they do burn the calories. So, but that's a lower percentage.
Huge, yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, I do this, but I will also, if there's a lot to do, forget to eat. Hours on it.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily always make up for it. So sometimes then when I finally realize I need to eat, then I'll eat a lot, but sometimes I don't. And so it's just like skipping meals while I'm stressed.
Yeah, that happens as well. What about genetics? Do you think that they influence our weight?
Yes.
As much as we
there is research that talks about it.
We're going to
into the next generation.
I am. So we all have different metabolic rate, okay? And there are people that have what we call a thrifty metabolism. These are the people that tend to put on weight really easily. These are the people that if we had a famine or something, they would survive, okay? And all the people with the fast metabolisms would not.
Yeah.
So this used to be a good thing, to have this thrifty metabolism, but in this day and age, it's not necessary because we have so many calories out there, and a lot of people who have that metabolism don't like it because it's easier for them to put on weight. Body frame size. We actually do have different frame sizes. So if you take your hand, wrap it around your opposite wrist, and you're going to go thumb and middle finger. If they overlap, you have a small frame size. If they just touch, you have a medium frame size. And if they don't touch, you have a larger frame size. Now, if you have really long fingers, that'll throw things off. But typically, this would be about right. So some people do have different frame size than others. Also, your mother's state when she was pregnant with you impacts your weight as an adult. So overweight mothers when pregnant tend to have overweight kids, even when those kids become adults. If your mother was restricting her calories for one reason or another when pregnant, those kids tend to be overweight, even as adults.
Severe
restriction as a compensation. Those kids will become overweight. If your mother was a normal weight during pregnancy, you're more likely to be normal weight as an adult. Here's the big study that came out just maybe 2 years ago on genetics and obesity. There is a gene called the FTO gene. If it's mutated and someone gets it from both parents, they have a 70% chance of becoming obese.
Wow.
So this gene has become mutated for some reason, we don't know why, and if they inherit that mutated gene from two people, what happens is the ghrelin, remember, which makes you feel hungry, it doesn't go away after a meal. So you still have elevated ghrelin, so after a meal, you're still hungry. You're not getting that satisfaction.
Even
so,
though the stomach is full.
Yes.
You're still
feeling, the hormone is still in your bloodstream. So basically, could they counter that? Yeah, you could, but you just have to tell your body and kind of go against the feeling of hunger. So there is a challenge
and
in there.
Don't listen to your body.
Right, I know. Right? That goes against what I'm trying to teach you guys. And then we have the set point theory, which is the theory that our fat stores are predetermined genetically. So we've all been sick before, right? And we lose a little bit of weight when we're sick, so we don't eat as much. So maybe you lose 5-10 pounds after you get sick. What happens the week after you get healthy to your weight?
It comes right back.
Does it go to the exact same spot?
No, it does for
usually.
Me. It does for me.
Usually it does. And this is the idea that your body has this set point, predetermined amount of fat cells, amount of fat in your fat cells, and it likes to be at this weight. So if you were to lose weight, okay, your body is going to send the signals throughout saying you need to eat more until you get up to that weight. You probably didn't even know you were eating more that week, right? The week after you were sick, but your body probably told you you were hungrier and you ate a little bit more to get to that set point. Here's the tricky thing with the set point theory is you can reset it higher, but not lower. I know.
That's so rude.
I know. So people who put on, 10, 15 pounds and stay there for a little bit and then want to go back and lose some weight, they will have hormones circulating until they're back to that new weight. Hmm. So this is, I know, it's
forever?
Kind of disappointing.
It'll never get
to yeah, so the people that have lost a ton of weight, they go back and check their hormone levels. They have these hormones telling them, eat, 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 all the time. And it's a constant fight. So, sorry for the bad news.
But how long did they do those testing? I mean,
years later.
Yeah.
And that's why you see a lot of people who lose weight, they gain it back, right?
But well, what's the hope then?
So
that's
I'm on my way back down. I need a kernel.
So it just has to be something you're comfortable with maintaining, right? An activity level.
You have to pay attention to it.
Right, and maintaining the number of calories that you're taking in. And you would have to pay more attention because if your body's, you're going to have to ignore your body a little bit, which goes against what, we're trying to say.
But
you can
maintain it
absolutely. It takes more work. Yeah.
There was a really interesting story just last week on NPR about the number of fat cells we have.
Yeah.
And that the number we have is really determined in childhood. And by the time you're 21, you have a
set
number of fat cells.
Yes.
And what happens later on is when people gain weight, those fat cells are just getting bigger. You're not getting more of them. And, of course, it's a story on radio, so I don't know all the details, but it just gave me the impression it was even one more reason to focus on what's being fed to children.
Mm-hmm.
Did I hear them right that this number of fat cells isn't predetermined and it's not the same for everybody, and what you eat as a child really has a real impact on the number of those cells?
It does. It's partially genetic, but when you're a baby and toddler is when you're growing fat cells, and then it kind of levels out, and then when you're in adolescence is when you gain more fat cells again. So those are the two prime times of growing new fat cells, and then you're correct. Your body can fill them and shrink them with fat. They have found in severely obese adults will create new fat cells, but otherwise we don't tend to do that. So what do we do? So we want to get back to the basics, and I actually was thinking about Becky's talk this morning, where some of you have that probably, and how when we try to control things, we mess them up, right? And think about the processed foods. I mean, when God created the Garden of Eden and the earth and had all these amazing, abundant, beautiful foods for us to eat, and now we tried to control things by making processed foods and refining our grains and all that, and we've turned it into a complete mess, right? So now we're to the point where we need to come back up and get back to where God wants us to be, which is the basics. more whole foods, plant your own garden, and if you can't do that, using a CSA, have you guys heard of those?
Yeah.
Community-supported agriculture. This picture is from the CSA that I get, and that's 1 week's supply of just fresh, local produce, all organic. It's beautiful. I love it. If you want to find a CSA near you, you can use this website here, localharvest.org. So if we use local, we cut out the middle. Going organic will help us to sustain the planet, getting away from pesticides, and also we're getting the pesticides away from our body as well. And there's local companies out there, but just finding the company that is local, maybe it's family run or whatever it is that you want to support, but actually looking into that can be beneficial. I didn't realize it over time. So I can stop at this slide, but if you guys have further questions, I have other stuff I was going to get to, but yeah.
You haven't said anything about hydration, and I have found for myself that if I stay fully hydrated, I don't. And the portion size is easier to manage. I just don't seem to eat
right.
as much.
Most of us are underhydrated, and water is amazing. And we'll you'll eat less, and then it's just you just need it for so many different things. So,
and I used to think that was 8 glasses of water a day or 64 ounces, and then for a while people were saying 1 ounce per pound. And yeah, it's at least 100 ounces a day for an adult.
So here's the thing with water is it's water in equals water out. Same with calories. If you want to maintain, your water balance. We don't need to overhydrate. So if you're thirsty, drink water. And if you're feeling satisfied with your thirst, then you don't need to. But the best way to actually tell is by your urine color. So it should be kind of a clearish yellow. That's the best way to tell if you're hydrated. If it's really yellow, you're not hydrated enough. And if it's very clear, that's too much. So you can't actually have too much water.
I've heard some people actually confuse hunger with what they really
when they're thirsty. Yes. Yeah, so it's just a matter of stopping, being mindful, paying attention. What do I need? Is it emotional? Is it thirst? Is it hunger? And paying attention to the body signals. Yeah.
Is there any facts yet on what GMOs do?
Yeah, I usually spend a whole 2-hour lecture on GMOs, so I don't know if you have a specific question or...
No, I just wondered if there were facts that say that's really bad or not so bad or...
Well, for me, it would depend on what they're doing with the GMO. I mean, if it's a GMO that when that plant grows up, it's killing bugs around it, do I want to ingest that? If it has the ability to kill bugs, that kind of bothers me personally, but some people, it's okay. And then there's some GMOs that are to fight a specific bacteria, which wouldn't impact us as much, and so that wouldn't bother me as much. But in general, GMOs... You know, they take a lot of pesticides, or they emit their own insecticide or pesticide. So if you go organic, you know you're not getting GMOs. Unfortunately, we keep voting down this label, the GMO thing in Washington and Oregon. But so we don't know what's GMOs unless you buy organic right now. So yeah, other questions?
What else were you going to talk?
My next slide is on organics versus non, like what it actually is. Because some people think healthier, but it's not necessarily healthier. The nutrition is actually pretty much the same. But and then I was going to talk more about actual specific ideas of foods you can eat that are good, and when to eat during the day, and that kind of thing. So I can continue if somebody wanted to stay, but
we have an act.
Yeah.
Just mentioning that I've heard of research lately that there are certain kinds of foods, berries in particular, and walnuts and green tea, that can really help combat some of the markers of metabolic disease.
Right.
Even in meal size quantities. So that's
yeah, so phytochemicals, antioxidants, getting those from your diet, which is again coming from foods from the earth. Nuts, seeds, that kind of thing. So. Anything else? Do you want to see this?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Did you already read this one, or do you want me to?
Next one.
Next one?
No,
no,
that's fine.
No, this is fine. So if you want organic, they don't use, you know, homemade fertilizers. They only use natural fertilizer. They're not allowed to use human sewage. Not allowed to use pesticides or GMOs. They can't use growth hormones or antibiotics with the animals. And they have to keep records. So that's what you're getting when you're getting organic. You guys heard of Dirty Dozen, Clean 15?
Yeah.
So Dirty Dozen tends to have the most pesticide residue. So if you have a hard time affording organic, these would be the ones to focus on because they have the most pesticides on them.
These are the ones to avoid.
These are the ones to choose organic, probably, because they do have a lot of pesticides. So usually apples is a big one, and I know our family eats a lot, so we do organic apples. And then anything where pesticides can soak in. So think of strawberries, anything soft, right? Whereas the Clean 15 are the ones that don't let the pesticide residue in as much. Because, you know, avocados, pineapple, they have a harder outside shell.
What about bananas?
Bananas, I would do organic if you can, because they actually, like, spray stuff on them to make them last longer until they get to us, the non-organic. So, yeah. Are you guys into diet, which diets are bad and good?
No.
Yes.
Sure.
Yes.
They did a big study, just came out last month, the best and worst, and they had a panel of expert nutritionists from around the country do this. So a Mediterranean and DASH were both tied for the top, and then here's some other good ones, but the ones to avoid, keto is really big right now.
It's really big.
And it is the worst one.
Keto, thank you.
Yeah. So, and Whole 30, that would be where you eat less meat, like maybe meat once or twice a week. It's good for the planet, good for you. So,
why Whole 30? What's really bad about it?
Whole 30 is not really sustainable, and I know it's meant for 30 days, but it's just not. I mean, you'll lose weight in 30 days if you follow it, but it's very restrictive. That's the biggest thing.
Hard to follow, either.
Yeah, I've had friends that have tried, and it's very difficult. So this is Jesus' diet, if you're interested in being more like him.
Well,
it was the original Mediterranean
that.
Diet.
I love that.
And it's just the idea that, you know, God made our bodies very special, and it's our job to take care of them. So we want to do that with our food. So just more ideas here. But allow yourself the things you really enjoy, but pay attention to your body and watch your portion sizes. So,
what about supplements?
The latest studies show that people who don't take supplements versus people that do. So people that don't are a little bit healthier. A lot of supplements have some fillers in them that may not be good for us. And then there's certain things like you can only absorb so much calcium at once, you know, only 500 milligrams, and we need about 15. So if you have a pill that has 100% of your calcium, you're not even absorbing it all. So it's better to get these nutrients from your diet than to try and just, I'm taking my multivitamin once a day, I'm good. You're probably not. And like, you know, protein and iron don't like each other. There's just some different things you don't want to combine, and it's better just to spread things out. And then when you eat whole foods, you get it, you know, the phytochemicals and antioxidants, which they can't put into a pill. So if there's something specific, like in this area, vitamin D is hard to get.
Mm-hmm.
In the summer, we're probably good, really. Mm-hmm. But in the winter months, that would be something to watch for. And then specifics to individuals, too, that might need to have a deficiency.
Mm-hmm. So you're a clinical dietitian, right?
No.
Oh. Do you know if insurance would be like, yeah, it's cool, go see them, or do you know if do you know anything about that?
I think if your doctor
has to recommend it,
then or gives you a referral, then you can get that covered.
Okay.
But it's, I mean, that's those, yeah, they
I
definitely.
I think it's becoming more common that they'll allow you.
And a medical doctor really has only had to take one nutrition course. So you really, if you have a question, you'd want to go see a registered dietitian or someone that teaches nutrition.
Can you mention the recommended sugar for child?
Yes.
What about adults?
I have that. It's one of these. But for adult females, it's around 25 grams per day, and adult males, it's around 35. And like a can of pop is 32. So an adult female would be over her amount just from one can of pop. And that's added sugar. So don't count the ones you're getting from your fruits.
What about sugar fruit?
Yeah.
The evils of sugar-free, I just ask.
No, I know. I wish, I mean, these are all topics I spend a whole day on. So the sugar-free will tend to have the sugar, the artificial sweeteners, right? Many of the artificial sweeteners were not ever meant to be food. They were, like, discovered in a laboratory, and they're very synthetic. You'd have to have a lot of it to really have it affect you. Personally, I would just stay away from it.
Does it change your metabolic rate? Have you seen that?
The studies have shown with the artificial sweeteners is that if you go sugar-free versus actual real whole sugar, the people who use the diet products tend to be at the same weight because you're eating something that your body thinks has calories and it doesn't. And so you actually eat more later to make up for those calories you didn't eat. And so like people who switch to diet soda, they don't tend to lose weight because of that. So it's not actually going to be beneficial. And you can get nutrients from like maple syrup, honey, whole sugar, like raw sugar, whereas you're not getting anything from the other stuff. So I would just go lower sugar, use the real stuff, and avoid the alternative sweeteners.
It also continues to drive your craving for sugars.
It does. Oh. Because some of those sweeteners are actually 300 times sweeter than real sugar. So then you have that drive for that sweet taste.
Fruit doesn't taste as sweet.
Yeah. Right. But if you get away from sugar for a while and then you eat an orange, you'll taste how sweet it is. And carrots are very sweet and you enjoy it more. Yeah. So.
Just something about time of day of eating?
Yeah. So you do want to eat breakfast. You want protein in your breakfast. You want to spread out your protein throughout the day because you can only digest about 30 grams of protein at a time. And a lot of us will have like 90 grams for dinner. So you want to have it throughout.
Say that again.
You can digest 30 grams of protein at a time. Most of us as females, we probably only need around 50, 60 grams a day.
And how much protein? Can you translate that to ounces?
A 3-ounce piece of chicken, which is the size of a deck of cards, has 30 ounces of chicken.
30 grams.
Yeah. So, and then if you're trying to lose weight, don't eat 2 to 3 hours before bed, but eat throughout the day as you become hungry is kind of the idea. And listen to the body signals. Stop when you're 80%. So don't go all the way to
starving.
Or starving.
And don't let yourself get to starving because then we tend to eat unhealthier things, right?
We just came off a night shift. The night shift is awful.
That throws your body so out of whack. Yeah, it really does because it throws off your sleep rhythm and so it throws off your hormone levels and then it throws off the eating hormones. Yeah. Anything else? You can come talk to me individually anytime. I'll be here tomorrow and today. Yeah.